So you heard Cheryl read a few moments ago that 11 disciples went to Galilee. Did you catch that there were only 11? Do you think they missed Judas? Have you ever been with a group of people long enough when one of them goes missing, there's a hole in the community, right? Even a cantankerous, someone you disagree with who might have stabbed you or hurt you or pricked you or pinched you a couple of times, even that person, when they're not around after you've been together for a while, you miss them, right? You notice the hole that they live in your life. There was something about Judas. Jesus had seen something in even Judas. And Judas had seen something in Jesus and in Jesus' way of living and his way of loving, but things went terribly wrong, terribly wrong. Poor choices that could not be undone, and now Judas is not there with them in Galilee. Jesus has sent him up to the mountain where you can see. Well, you've been up on a mountain. How far can you see? When was the last time you were up here over on Mount Brunel? And you look down and there's the Lake Austin streaming down in the city of Austin, the skyline that never quits growing, and the horizon that way. And you look back this way, and there's the Pennybacker Bridge and the 360 corridor, and the river bends around that way. Or maybe the last time you were on a mountain that makes Mount Brunel look like an anthill. Can you remember being up on top of a mountain where you could see tomorrow almost, right? I like to be up on Keystone Mountain in Keystone. You can see the little lake down in Lake Dillon. You can see the little cars that look like ants. You can see forever in places like that. And that is exactly where Jesus sent them. And when they got there, up there, where they could see this forever view, they also saw Jesus with them alongside that forever view up on that mountain. And they worshiped Jesus there. But some, Matthew says, doubted. After all they had been through together, after all they had seen with their own eyes, tears they've had to wipe through their eyes to see, after all they had done together with Jesus, done themselves, many days wiping sweat and fear from their brow, still, even those 11, those closest 11, some doubted, which I find to be good news today. Because there are some days doubt clouds my faith. I love driving in early in the morning because along the Greenbelt, soaring over Barton Creek, sometimes it looks like you're in Gatlinburg or in the Great Smoky Mountains because there are these clouds of mist, rivers of clouds streaming across the Greenbelt. But you have to plow through them. You can see they're coming, and where you're going is on the other side, but you go through the cloud anyway, even if you can't see. It's beautiful, but still it's disorienting. And then on some days, if you're really lucky, when you come over Town Lake, well, there's even a bigger cloud that has rested. Maybe it's taken a nap. Maybe it hasn't woken up yet. The cloud is resting on the river, and you have to plow through the cloud, and it kind of billows up out of your way. Doubt, for me, is just like that. For a few moments, I cannot see where I'm going, but I keep going anyway because I know where I need to be. And so clouds kind of waft and finally get out of the way. In the clouds like that, or maybe not too far from the clouds like that, Jesus has sent his disciples up in the mountain to speak to them and speaks to us here this day with whatever fogs our faith. And he says, all authority in heaven and earth has been given me. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations. Jesus was there on this mountain with his friends. And when they looked down, they didn't see little hash marks dotting the landscape, you know, like we see when we look at our map, these little hash marks or the boundaries of a territory. When you look over the side of Mount Bonnell, there is not a hash line down the middle of that lake that tells you that that side is Westlake Hills and this side is Austin, right? Or the Eanes School District and the Austin School District. When you're up high like that, you do not see a boundaries. That's where they're standing. And Jesus is saying, with a boundless love, go, y'all. Go. Not just to this nation. Not just to Israel's kids. Not just to Abraham's kids in their three traditions. Not just to one skin tone. Not just to one language, not just to one way of living, not just in Texas, y'all, not just in a Baptist voice. go to all without division, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teach them to live as I have lived among you in love with you. Oh yeah, and remember this, I will be with you always to the end of the age, which means you and me, we're not alone. Not one day of our life, not our loneliest, darkest, saddest, emptiest day, not even for a blink, not for a breath, with us closer than our breath, in every breath, in the darkest shadow of every valley we find ourselves in, was, is, ever shall be with you and with me. Maybe the idea of thinking of God as a triune God, three in one, one in three, is not just a name for God, but a tool for us to remember that we belong to God and God belongs to us. We are connected, woven together so finely that we can't see it, and we're bound together and bound together. That love cannot be contained in any single thing, least of all a word, that God is with us in ways that are beyond our five senses, but somehow present to us in a way that we can still somehow perceive and even share. I have a buddy named Andy Van Slyke, as a friend I grew up with at church. He's a crazy person. We also went to high school later. A senior, when I was a freshman, Andy taught me how to cleanly sink consistently a free throw in the gym at church. But he was also on the back row in that choir room that day. I got tricked into performing and trying out for a thing, snickering on the back row when I had to try out for that. I told you all about it a long time ago. That's Andy on the back row. Andy is a really good guy, and he's a good friend, and we keep up with each other maybe once a month, maybe 6 months goes by sometimes. He serves on the leadership team, the executive leadership team at Sprint in Kansas City, and he probably still has a portion of the money he made in seventh grade mowing the neighborhood lawns. No one stretches money like Andy, which maybe is why he's such a great employee at Sprint. A few months ago, he shared this story with me, that something that happened in his life, and it's very believable. It's 5:30 in the morning, he says, and I'm wearing running shorts, and I'm bent over a trash can, dumpster diving for coupons. This is very Andy Van Slyke. And then he hears this voice, from a small voice from behind him, excuse me, sir, extremely embarrassed, which I don't know why, because this is not the first time he's been found in this position. Anyway, he turns around and says, sees this well-dressed young woman who says, do you live here? Well, Andy says, now it's really awkward and uncomfortable, and I'm not really sure how this is going to go next, and I finally decide I better answer her with more than the red on my face. No, ma'am, I do not live here. But then he noticed that she had tears in her eyes, and that the note in her hand was trembling. She was shaken by something. Even her voice had a bit of a tremble to it. Someone had left a vile note on her car, on the windshield, because she'd parked in the no parking zone near the mailboxes. Well, a moving van had blocked her parking space. And where she parked left plenty of space for other people to walk and get there, just added two or three more steps. But she was so perplexed and injured, wounded really, by someone dropping the F-bomb on her and treating her so harshly about adding a few steps to get to the, didn't they know that big truck was blocking her driveway? She didn't leave a note. Andy, caught off guard and still embarrassed, I tried to assure her, he said, that she had done nothing wrong, that some people are just nasty. Please don't let it ruin your day, he said. It was my best attempt at empathy. But all morning long, well into the lunch hour, I could not get her hurt expression off my face. And it left echoing in my head this question, what is wrong with people? What is wrong with the world? You ever find that question bouncing around in your head? Can't get it out of there? Still with him on his lunch break, he runs a few errands. He's trying to plow his way through this book, so he's read a little section more of this book. And he looks down at his watch, and oh my gosh, he's got a staff meeting in 15 minutes. But some jerk in front of him now in his car does not understand the concept of right turn on red. And he's late. And he can feel his neck starting to get hurt. And now that jerk in front of him still is going to go straight through the right turn only lane. Great, good googly. He says the back of his head was really net. He was starting to lean on that horn, deciding not if I should honk at this idiot, but how long I'm going to lay on my horn. And just about as he leans into the thing, all kinds of foulness swarming through his mind. Words that he had read not even 10 minutes earlier returned to him. Someone had handed him this book, and he'd been plowing through it in pieces at lunchtime. Not even 10 minutes earlier, he read these words: "The prerequisite for receiving the grace of God is knowing you need it." And just before that, in the sentence before that, one of his favorite quotes by G.K. Chesterton, in response to a question that was rattling in his head and rattles through ours, asked to religious leaders of the day, "What's wrong with the world?" Chesterton writes back, "Dear sirs, I am." "Yep," Andy said. "Question answered. And even I get it. Sometimes the message has to be pretty clear," he says, "but I got that one. Love your neighbor. Love your neighbor." But you know, Andy did not hear a voice out loud in his car. But those words somehow found him there in his car, hand about this far away from the horn. And Andy didn't put that moving truck in front of that young lady's parking place and didn't leave the note on her car, but was somehow in the very exact right space at 5:30 in the morning, leaning over a dumpster. And that jerk in front of him, who was in the right turn only lane, was also in the very right place at the very right moment, somehow, for Andy to get a message that had been sent to him. Far from understanding Trinity, stories like Andy's help me move a little bit closer to the idea. Like this video that Cheryl showed for us at camp that I want to show you right now. I know that hunger is too big for one person to take on, but you never know what can grow from one thing. You know that teacher in third grade handed her that seed when she was Eamon and Luke and Madison and Morgan's age. And now she's Emma's age. Boo, Greg Gregory's granddaughter, went with us to camp. She grew up here. You guys watched her grow up. She helped us at camp, saw this video and said, "Hey, I bet we could grow a garden at church. What do you think about growing a garden in the backyard, y'all?" You never know what one seed can do, right? Katie planted that cabbage, and here we are talking about it. Who knows how many people will go for it? You think that's how the Great Commission works? Do you think this is what the Trinity is? With us in ways we have no way to comprehend, but we feel it. Like that prayer that only Hannah could have prayed today. Yanked heaven so much closer to right where we are right now. One more story. Did you play hide-and-go-seek when you were a kid? Yeah, kids in the neighborhood? We did too. We like to play hide and go seek and dripping now, don't we? Yeah, around the house, outside and inside. One of my favorite stories that Fred Craddock tells, actually my favorite story to hear Fred Craddock tell, is to hear him tell that story that I shared with you not long ago. He found this small place under the stairs and he hid. "They'll never find me, they'll never find me, they'll never find me, they'll never find me, they'll never find me." So he puts his bare toe out from under the porch, which his sister sees. "Uh-oh, I found you," and she runs back to the tree. "Tag, tag, you're it, you're it." One of my favorite stories. Did you ever have a kid in the neighborhood who played so well that you never found the kid? We did. And so did Robert Fulghum, who writes a little bit about hide and go seek, and I want to share some of this with you right now. After a while, he says, we just give up on the kid. Let him rot where he was. Sooner or later, that kid would show up, though, and he'd be steaming because we didn't go looking for him. And we'd be mad right back at him because that is not how the game is supposed to be played anyway. There is hiding and there is finding, we'd say. And he'd say, it is not hide and give up. And we'd yell about who made the rules and who cared for who. And anyway, I'm not sure I'm playing with you anymore if you can't play the way we've asked you to play. And who needs him anyway and stuff like that. Turned out to be hide, seek, and yell, which is the routine they normally fell to. But no matter what, that kid, next time we'd play, he hid too well. could never find the guy. Foljam says, for all I know, that kid is still hidden somewhere out there in the woods around Waco. He says, as I'm writing this to you, it's an October warm evening, and in the neighborhood, there's a game going on with the kids. And under a pile of leaves in the front yard, just under my window, there has been a kid hiding for a long time. And everybody else is out there on the base, and they're about ready to give up. And I considered walking across the street to the base and saying, hey, y'all looked under these leaves that are moving under my tree? And I also thought about setting the leaves on fire just to get the kid up and out of there. But finally, he says, I lifted up the window and yelled, get found, kid, which did the trick. Startled him enough that he jumps up and he ran crying home to his mother. And Foljam writes, you know, it's difficult sometimes to know how to be helpful in some circumstances. But then he writes, a man I know found out last year that he had terminal cancer. The man's a doctor, and he knew about dying, and he didn't want to make his family or his friends suffer through it with him, and so he kept his secret, and he died. And everybody said how brave he was to bear his suffering in silence and not tell everybody, but privately. His family and his friends were angry that he didn't need them, and that he didn't trust them or trust their strength with him. And it hurt that he didn't say goodbye or give them a chance to say a better goodbye. He had hidden too well. Getting found would have kept him in the game. Hide and seek, adult style. Wanting to hide. Needing to be sought. Confused about being found. I don't want to let anybody know. What will people think? Oh, I just don't want to bother anybody. Foljam says, better than hide and go seek is the game sardines, which almost every youth group loves, including this one. Sardines, I see you smiling. You all know how sardine goes? The person who's it is the one who goes and hides. And then one by one, as you find the person, you get in the hiding place, which has been this pulpit before, and you crowd in there. And as somebody else runs by, they crowd in there. And before long, everybody except for that last person is crowded in. And what gives us away? Everybody's stacked together like puppies in a pile, he says. Somebody giggles. And somebody else laughs. And everybody gets found. You know, medieval theologians describe God in hide-and-seek terms, too. They called God Deus absconditus, hidden God. Do you use that name sometimes? Hidden God, when all around you, in and out of you, in your breath, in the beautiful details you painted in your prayer. Yeah, I think God is a sardines player and will be found the very same way we are found, by the sound of laughter of all of us crowded in somewhere together, all of us. Did you use the word ollie ollie oxen free when you were a kid playing those games? It's a code word. It means come on in wherever you are. It's a brand new game. Maybe this is a good picture of Trinity, y'all. Maybe it's what the Great Commission is all about. Ollie, ollie, oxen free. I say it to you. You who have hidden too well now. Ollie, ollie, oxen free. It's time to come in. Get found. Will you pray with me? Closer than our breath, right now. Amen.
Our hymn of response.